Now, Joe Biden selected Senator Kamala Harris of California as his running mate on Tuesday, and she's the first black woman and first person of Indian descent to be nominated for national office by a major party. In Monday's newsletter, they looked at some of the factors weighing in on Biden's decision, and today we turn to the announcement and what will be happening. There is a particular voice clip with the announcement that happened I would love to play for you before we have a chat to Brooks Spector about this, sort of how important this is, and how important this is not only for us as a country, but for the world at large.
My fellow Americans, now let me introduce to you, for the first time, your next Vice President of the United States, Kamala Harris. Kamala, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
Thank you, Joe. As I said, Joe, when you called me, I am incredibly honored by this responsibility, and I'm ready to get to work. I am ready to get to work. After the most competitive primary in history, the country received a resounding message that Joe was the person to lead us forward. And Joe, I'm so proud to stand with you. And I do so mindful of all the heroic and ambitious women before me, whose sacrifice, determination, and resilience makes my presence here today even possible. This is a moment of real consequence for America. Everything we care about, our economy, our health, our children, the kind of country we live in, it's all on the line. We're reeling from the worst public health crisis in a century. The president's mismanagement of the pandemic has plunged us into the worst economic crisis since the Great Depression. And we're experiencing a moral reckoning with racism and systemic injustice that has brought a new coalition of conscience to the streets of our country demanding change. America is crying out for leadership. Yet we have a president who cares more about himself than the people who elected him. A president who is making every challenge we face even more difficult to solve. But here's the good news. We don't have to accept the failed government of Donald Trump and Mike Pence. In just 83 days, we have a chance to choose a better future for our country. So, Joe, Dr. Biden, thank you for the trust you've placed in me. Jill, I know you will be an incredible First Lady. And my husband, Doug, and I are so grateful, grateful to become a part of your extended family.
Brooks Spector, the Associate Editor, Daily Maverick, and former United States diplomat. You've been listening to that. A very good morning to you, Brooks.
Good morning, Zane. Good to be with you.
I like the part of that entire speech I like is the fact that she says, here's the goodness. In 83 days, you can change that if you don't like what is happening. And I think this is a huge message for South Africans that, you know what, you can change things if you don't like what is happening at the moment in this country, and you change it at the polls. But Kamala Harris has had some broad appeal as a rising star in the Democratic Party, hey?
Yes, no, she's the thing that strikes me. Well, there are a couple of things. I almost said the one thing, and then I realized there were several. I mean, the first thing is she's of a different generation from Joe Biden. She's essentially a whole 20-some years younger than he is. But even so, she's already had a significant political experience. She was a district attorney in city of San Francisco, then she was the attorney general for the state of California, which, if it were an independent nation, would be, in economic terms, the fifth or sixth largest country in the world. So it's no mean thing to have state office out of California. And then for the last 4 years, she's been a senator from California. California has two, like each state, so there are 100 in the country, which means that she has multiple committee assignments. And if you remember just a year or so ago, in the hearings for people like Brett Kavanaugh, who was the Trump appointee or nominee to become a Supreme Court justice, she took him on. She did not flinch. She decided she was going to prosecute the case against him. And in the popular imagination, she's the person who made Brett Kavanaugh cry in the witness stand, which is quite extraordinary. And that provokes from Donald Trump the response, she's a nasty woman. And that's pretty good news all by itself from where I sit. But the other thing that you have to add to this mix is that, you know, her ethnicity is something which is more than simply the question of saying, oh, she's black. Yeah, her heritage is both South Asian and Caribbean, parent from India, a parent from Jamaica. She grew up in the San Francisco area in Oakland, Berkeley. Father was at Stanford University. Her mother was doing cancer research. She attended largely white schools as a child. Then her mother moved to Montreal, Canada, for the years that she was in high school to work at McGill University there. And in her own admission, Harris says that, well, she had trouble studying in French. And I can believe that, if you all of a sudden you're in a total immersion universe. Montreal is a very French city. And then she went to Howard University. That was a choice. That was not an automatic decision because it's 3,000 miles away from her home base in California. And Howard has been the leading historically black college and university institution in the United States since its founding in 1867. And there she decided that her allegiance, her identity, herself was in an institution where virtually all of her fellow students and many of her instructors would have also been African, would have been African American, or possibly some from Africa or the Caribbean, in an effort to make herself into an American and African American, a black person, almost in a sheer act of will, through her immersion in an institution and its social activities, its human rights campaigns, and all the rest of it before she went on to study law. And that says that she's an embodiment of the new wave of immigration into the United States. She's a child of immigrants and has made herself into what she saw as the new America. And I like that about her.
Chatting this morning to Brooke Spector, the associate editor of the Daily Maverick and former United States diplomat, and we're chatting this morning about Kamala Harris and her running mate to Joe Biden. This seems to be a very clever move in terms of certain things. First of all, you've got Donald Trump, who hasn't, in many people's opinion, hasn't managed the sort of COVID-19 pandemic quite well in the country. And on the back of Barack Obama appointing Kamala Harris as his nomination for vice president. But she hasn't always been on Joe Biden's side because, you know, she sharply criticized Biden during a sort of primary debate sort of last year over his opposition to busing as a means of integrating schools. So have they found a sort of common ground? And what does she actually bring to the party in terms of their chances of winning this election?
Well, I think it speaks the circumstances you alluded to. I think they speak well of Joe Biden, that that he was bigger than just a a collision the two of them had in an early primary debate, which is now, you know, months ago, that he decided that, yep, politics is not a Tea Party. Politics means you have to make alliances and allies and pick your friends, even if they sometimes take a swing at you. And she did. But that was the primaries. And, you know, the debate is, after all, about creating a difference between you and the other. In this case, it was 8 or 9 people on the stage at the same time. So you have to figure out a way to stand out. What she brings to this team is, if you agree with Joe Biden and his choice, is that she's ready from the first moment to step in should something happen. Let's not put too fine a point on it. Joe Biden's 77 years old, and he'll be 78 by the day of the inauguration in January next year. You can look at the actuarial tables, and you can inform yourself as to the likelihood of him surviving. He's in fine health, apparently, and may well, you know, do well for the next 4 years, but the presidency is a tough job. It's a very tough gig. And so you definitely want a vice president who can step in for you at a moment's notice if you become ill-disposed. And she fits that job, and they both seem to think so. And that's the key thing. And what he said about her and his appointment of her, or selection of her, is that he wanted to emulate the arrangement, the agreement that he and Barack Obama had back in 2008, which is that she would be the last person in the room in a weighty debate, a discussion, a decision moment, and her voice would be the last one he heard. There'll still be the final deciding vote. You know, the president makes a choice for good or evil on a decision, because that's his job. But she will be the last opinion, what they're in support of, or, hey, wait a minute, here's another idea. And that's how he hopes that she's going to fulfill it. And given her personality, I can't really see her doing anything else.
Well, if anything happens to Joe Biden, America will then be saddled with their very first woman president, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, we're not going to sit here and say, yes, the poor man is going to be carried away. But on the other hand, you know, you have to be prepared for the eventualities. And, you know, 50, 60 years ago, the vice presidency was seen as a sort of a graveyard of a politician, loyal and geographically or ideologically different from the president, but helping build support for the election. And that segues to the other question you'd ask: what does she bring to the ticket? There are a lot of people who somehow seem to have the illusion that she's a law and order candidate and a harsh centrist, if there is such a thing. I read a column by a public defender based in San Francisco. Public defenders, obviously, are the person in a court that are opposite the prosecutor. The defender is defending the indigent person who can't afford a lawyer, and the prosecutor is prosecuting them. And this woman's argument is, wait a minute, Kamala Harris is no hardcore law and order person, even though she prosecuted people to the full extent of the law when she believed they were guilty. She did a number of things on the question of rehabilitation and prisoner rights and various other activities that make her very clearly not a hard-edged, point-of-the-sword law and order candidate. But she's going to speak to a whole generation of people who, as we've been sort of nibbling around, who feel that they have not heretofore really had a bite at this apple.
Chatting this morning to Brooks Spector, he's the associate editor at the Daily Maverick and the former United States president. We're chatting about Kamala Harris and, of course, from California. She's the running mate for Joe Biden. She's the first black woman and the first person of Indian descent to be nominated for national office by a majority party. Somebody said to me this morning, Brooks, that, you know, in politics, it's the only place that actually where your great-grandmothers, great-grandmothers, great-grandmothers' heritage and what they did wrong actually comes into play. Are there any skeletons in the cupboard for Kamala Harris?
There don't appear to be. About the only thing, it's not a skeleton, it's just an interesting sidelight. For some years, she dated Willie Brown, who was sort of the almost inherited mayor of San Francisco, black man, veteran politician. And so she hasn't been locked up in a closet somewhere for all these years. Mm. She's lived her life. And I think the good news is that people have been vetting her for some years now, in her senatorial race and before that in the attorney general's race. What will happen now is, without question, people are going to go through every single case that she prosecuted at the city and state level. Yeah. They're going to go through every single one of those to see if there was a misstep or if there's somebody who got prosecuted and sentenced and turns out to have been guilty and offended by it. And, you know, the way the world is put together, yeah, too, they may well find one.
Yes, they definitely will find one, yes.
It's, you know, that's the nature of a courtroom system. Yeah. Sometimes there are mistakes. And if that's the best they can do, that's not much. The other thing you saw just in the last couple of days, the Trump supporters have tried to argue that somehow, in some way, she's not really an American citizen because the question of her parents' visa status is not fully described in public. Now, only problem with that, just to round that off, is that the Supreme Court, the Constitution, the laws of the country are very clear on this. You're born in America, regardless of who your parents were or are, you're a citizen, period. End of story.
Happening this morning and chatting to Brooks Spector. Brooks, very, very quickly, in your opinion, a yes or no, Donald Trump surviving and, of course, Joe Biden together with Kamala Harris, which way would you be putting it on the 3rd of November?
Oh, everybody wants to know the answer. If I were in charge, I'd tell you who'd win.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it's going to depend on 150 million people casting ballots. And that's going to depend on the extent to which mail-in votes are going to be happening, to the way in which the pandemic goes, to the way in which the economy shifts or doesn't, and to the way the quote-unquote racial tumult in the country after George Floyd either continues or goes away. All those are four variables. That's a lot to live with in making a pick. Mm-hmm. But if the polls are accurate now, it's Joe Biden's to lose.
Brooks Spector, thank you so much for chatting to us. He's the associate editor at Daily Maverick and the former United States diplomat.